Everybody, and welcome to Geek Actually, episode 88 for the 12th of June 2010. I am David McVane. Joining me in studio today is Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I'm very much looking forward to playing Scrabble. Because I was testing it before we started, and now all I can think about is playing Scrabble.
All right, we will explain that in just a second. We're also joined by Shane Gregory. How are you, Shane?
Very well, thank you.
This feels like a Geek Actually Tech show, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm just going to get you to get a little bit closer to your mic there, Shane.
Yep.
All right, so what are we? This is the Geek Actually podcast. Basically, it's your week in geek, or your weekly dose of geek, or any way you want to put it. We do a little bit of tech, we do a little bit of film, and we are fast approaching our 100th episode, which is all very exciting, I must say. Now, I actually didn't write the summary for this week because the show notes were so late, but basically, this week is Steve Note. Let's face it. It's WWDC, and Steve Jobs took the stage and announced the new iPhone, and we've got some video coverage from that. And those who are anti-Apple people out there, I apologize in advance, but we do cover things like iPhones and iPads and stuff because we're in love with them, because quite frankly, for those who are on the video, I have my iPad now. Things like, boy, I've got that dramatic lighting again. Look, yeah. That's it. Aww. Anyway, for those who are wondering what I'm talking about, we go out live on Ustream at geekactually.com/live every Saturday. We're running a little bit late today because we will have a mystery guest in the studio a little bit later.
Maybe.
Maybe.
If she decides to turn up.
If she hasn't gotten lost getting from one shop to another, is all I can say. In film news, we've got some remakes coming up. We've got the return of a grand master of horror coming back to a genre that he's already done, and the Muppets are making a comeback.
Yes
love the Muppets, love me some Muppets. And later on in the show, we're going to review the new action film The A-Team. But don't run away, it's actually probably not as bad as you think.
Right, I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah. All right, but we're going to get started on this show with something that is neither tech nor film related. It is kind of geek related, though, because as geeks, we all love our junk food. And, you know, junk food is the staple of life for us. we like our pizzas and so forth. And sure. We like our hamburgers. Now, last weekend, our local coffee shop, Ambrosia, which is where we get our coffee from. Thank you very much, Joe. They actually embarked on trying to break the Guinness Book of World Records for the largest commercially available hamburger in the world. Now, this record has been held for quite some time by the Americans, and the last burger, I believe, was 86.4 kilos, or something around those weights. And so Joe, up at Ambrosia, decided to try and beat this record, and last weekend they did the beat. It took them 3 months to plan, about $2,000 to make the burger, and it took 12 or 13 hours to cook. And I was there in the morning when they first brought it out. And in fact, we put it up on the website already. So if you go to geekactually.com, you'll actually see photos. But here's some video and an interview I shot with him. I do apologize. It is about 3 minutes long. But pay attention, because this thing is a massive burger. So here you go. Here is the world record attempt for the world's largest hamburger. Okay, I'm standing here with Joe, who's the owner of Ambrosia. And so, Joe, tell me, why would you want to make the world's largest hamburger?
It's just something to keep me going, you know?
Something to keep you going. I can think of other things to keep
something
me going.
Exciting. And, you know, it's been held by the American for a long time.
Yeah, so what is the current record?
84.7, I think.
84.7, and yeah, I've looked at your scale before.
Yeah.
You're currently at 96 kilos,
yeah?
Wow, is that 96 including the tray?
Yeah, with the tray. We have to minus 6 still.
Minus 6. So 90 kilos. Very good.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you to make this monster?
We started at 9:30 last night.
Yep.
And we finished at 12 o'clock.
12 o'clock.
Yeah, wow. 13 hours. Yeah.
13 hours to make a hamburger.
About around 3 months of planning for it.
And the big question is it edible?
It is.
Yeah?
It's going to be commercially available.
Commercial?
For 1 year.
Oh, so people are going to be able to order these, are they? So is this one going to be eaten?
I don't. Yeah, it is.
Yeah?
It is. We use the same ingredients we use for our burgers.
Oh, it smells like one of your burgers.
Yeah, very good quality.
I think it's fantastic. So when are they coming to? When are they
coming?
So how much is 90? What is? Well, that's about 60 kilos of meat, right?
That, yeah, we started with 83 kilo, and we end up with 64. I think.
And so,
we lost around 15 kilos.
How long does it take to cook just the patty in this situation? That's the 12 hours. And where'd you get the bread made?
We cooked it with our bread mill. It took him 6 hours each bun to do.
Wow. And how much does the bun weigh?
20 and a half kilos.
And did you actually consider, I'm looking here at the burger, you've got all these little cheese slices. Did you actually consider talking to a dairy about making you one big cheese slice?
No, not yet. I'll think about that.
Maybe for the commercially available one. What do you think?
Yeah, it will.
All right, so when are they coming to judge you?
We've got a surveyor coming now at 12:30. And we've got to send all the videotapes and the witnesses. They have to send their statements to Guinness World Record, and they should come back to us as soon as possible.
Okay, so the last question we have to ask, what do you get out of it?
It's publicity, mainly publicity.
Right. So there's no prize or anything?
No. But, I wanted to do it all the time, and, the publicity people saying that the biggest burger in Ambrosia Randwick, so it's good.
I think that's fantastic. Well, thank you very much, Joe, and
we'll
be here for coffee every morning. All thanks
right.
A lot. What do you think of the burger?
It's ginormous!
It's just huge. Look at it. Nom, 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 nom.
As Naughty pointed out, that burger weighs more than him.
Yeah. I was trying to explain it to Nikki. I was trying to say, Nikki, that burger is 2.5 times you.
You could not eat that even if you tried.
It's a very big burger. Now, the good news on this, I was talking to Joe this morning. The money has actually now come in. He didn't mention it on the video because it wasn't official at that time, but now it's official. They also raised $3,000 for the Sydney Children's Hospital for building this burger. So there's the positive spin on it. So, and I have a very soft spot for the Sydney Children's Hospital, as you might know. So I am very, very proud of them for doing that. And there is hopefully the world's biggest commercially available hamburger. When I say commercially available, it has to be commercially available for a year, which means if somebody comes in, they should be able to order that burger.
Nice.
It's a scary
I reckon we should all raise $3,000.
By making giant burgers.
and make them make another one.
Okay, Joe actually did throw a price tag on it. He said that he doesn't really want to make another one, if you can imagine. So he actually did say that if you want to buy one, they're $3,000.
At least he put a price on.
That's right. So there's your price tag, and it is all done. All right. So let's move on to actual tech news now. Now, this is late breaking news. I got emailed this last night. This is the one that is going to inflame Josh, because I know that it inflamed me at the time. I've had a few hours to settle down on it, but Josh hasn't. And I think it'll flame Shane too. So now it was also just brought up by our chat room. So thank you very much, chat room, for also reminding me, because I didn't put this in the show notes. It was literally a last minute addition. However, let's talk about this. ZDNet is reporting, Ben Grubb from zdnet.com.au is reporting yesterday that the Attorney General's Department in Australia is in discussions with the ISP industry on implementing data retention regime in Australia. Such a regime would require companies providing internet access to log and retain every customer's private web browsing history for a certain period of time for law enforcement to access when needed.
So
basically, they want to wiretap everybody's internet.
Okay. Now, they're meeting about this at the moment.
Apparently. Okay, let's go into a little bit more detail here, and we'll say that they're looking at copying the European Union, who formally adopted this data retention directive, a little while ago, but basically their retention is between 6 and 24 months of holding the data. Of course, the words pedophile and terrorism are being thrown around. Okay, now, the Australian government is actually saying that they are very, very interested in this. They are looking at the European directive as a model, but they are actually considering holding the information between 5 and 10 years. Which I just look at and just go, no, God, damn, dude. Up until now, in Australia, the way the system works is if they believe that you are doing something illegal, the police must get a court order from a judge. And basically, it's like wiretapping a phone. They then talk to the ISP that you're part of. They tap your ISP and they record all your data going through for a period of time, which is very fair. And that's the way it should work. What they're saying is they just want to have everybody's data. And my lovely wife, Katie, and Little Man goes, where are they going to store all of this data?
This is the more important part.
Excuse me. You're talking about 20 million people over 5 to 10 years worth of data. There's a lot of data being held onto there. It goes on, the industry source, one industry source has basically said that this would be very scary and very expensive. Another industry source said it the way I believed it, which basically said, be very fucking afraid.
Yeah.
You know, this is Big Brother.
Yeah,
this is where they are watching it.
Well, this is what has always pissed me off about the whole concept of the internet. It's just like it's apparently some force that's sort of outside standard models of law, and I don't quite understand why it's treated any differently and why something like that is just allowed. Like, I mean, if anyone here has seen the show The Wire, they'll know that it is fucking hard to get a court order to get a wiretap.
Well, it's a complete breach of privacy, and Australia has such strong privacy laws already that I'm surprised that they could even think about it. Now, let's be very clear. Our federal government is about to go to election.
Yeah.
Okay, they're about to go to election. They try and push this through, they're going to fucking lose the election. People will get pissed at this.
Oh, dude, they're already losing.
They're already on thin ice anyway. But all right, now, the one last quote here from the industry basically says, they seem quite intent on implementing the regime, and they keep throwing up words like terrorism and pedophiles. We're talking browsing history and emails way beyond what I consider to be normal SMS, retaining full browsing history and everything. I think it is just shameful. I think
they're just assuming that most Australians
are criminals,
are pedophiles. Or
that's right. Basically,
terrorists.
What they're doing is they're taking away the concept of innocent until proven guilty. They're basically saying everybody is guilty until proven innocent.
This is just a further push towards that whole thing of terrorism, and just the fact that the word seems to basically open doors that the government has never had before.
Unbelievable. It is like when they introduced the Patriot Act into America,
yeah,
giving them unprecedented power.
I've never understood how those two words have so much power. Yes, they are both things that are scary and we should worry about them, right? But if you throw a law at me and then say, oh, it's so that we can deal with the pedophiles, I'm going to look at you and go, how many of them could there possibly be in this country that requires you to tap every single person's internet account?
Absolutely. And I think at this point, it does require me to have my little rant at this point, which is basically when I talk, forget pedophiles for a minute, because I think the whole pedophile thing has been blown way out of proportion. But let's talk about terrorism for a minute and look at the word terrorism and say, what does terrorism mean? It means to create terror. All right. Terrorism does not mean blow up everything in sight. What a terrorist's job to do is to create terror. Now, any time that we chip away at anything that is our fundamental rights or the way we live or change our lifestyle in any way, shape, or form because of a terrorism attack, what has happened in that situation? The terrorist has won. The best thing we can do is show that we're not afraid.
Yeah.
The best thing we can do is say, okay, you blew up a couple of buildings. Damn, life goes on, right? Terrorists don't win. What happens, though, is we say, let's introduce the Patriot Act. Let's start wiretapping everybody. Let's check everybody at the airport. Let's make you take your shoes off. The terrorists are winning. They don't even have to blow up anything else anymore. We're so scared of them now that we're making shit up. We're not even attempting to let them blow up. You look at it and go, since 9/11, realistically, what major terrorist action has taken place on American or Australian or any other Western country soil? Okay, yes, those are the Barcelona bombs, right? But relatively small in comparison, you know? Yeah. And you sit there and look at it and go, we haven't had, sheer numbers-wise, we haven't had that many terrorist attacks.
What else pisses me off about this whole situation is exactly what you're saying about how, you know, the terrorists are basically winning now, right? It's so interesting because these... new laws, these big, massive changes that we're getting nowadays, aren't even sparked by a particular event.
No!
They're just being implemented. It's not like terrorists hacked local government and found out location of person at this particular time. No, it's just, we'll just put it in just in case.
Yeah.
And it's like, who exactly needs this?
I think what it is exactly... the government is trying to, they're trying to score points with the middle demographic, that whole blue collar worker, because they've pissed them off at the moment with this whole mining tax scheme. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to appeal to them by saying, see, but we're keeping you safe, right? And people who really don't understand technology at all are probably looking at that going, yeah, I don't see a fundamental problem with that. You know, you know, so what? They're tracking your ISP. They don't understand the ramifications of this. They don't understand that this information is now out there. And if they do anything wrong in the next 10 years, anything, all of their back history is going to be dredged up and used against them.
Yeah.
You know, and then that's just wrong. It's just every, dude, in every
like,
way.
This is like how Brazil started. Just thinking about those opening scenes where they bust through the door. It's like the very concept of the fact that you do something wrong and it's there. It doesn't matter how hard you try or if you, like, you click on the wrong link or you're at a website that's kind of borderlining, teetering on bad, and then a pop-up loads up that has midget porn in it or something like that, and that's on your record now. And it's like you may not even be interested in that, but that is now attached to your name because the federal government have seen you accessing that site.
Now, Rob has just pointed out in the chat room that the underwear bomber from Nigeria boarded a plane in Chicago and tried to blow up the plane in Chicago. Let's just stress here. Tried to blow up a plane. Without wiretapping all of our internet and taking away every one of our freedoms, we still managed to stop him.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so we look at it and go, with the existing laws in place as they are now, we stopped him. Yeah. Why do we need to suddenly throw more of these?
We need to be quite clear on this. We're not saying that that a lot of these changes aren't useful. Like the whole idea of airplane, you know, travel now being a lot more, you know, stringent.
Absolutely.
I actually have no problem. I travel quite a bit to and from, you know, sort of around this place, around this country. And even then, I have no problem with the new laws that have been put in. Okay, yes, it takes me a little while to get through customs now. Okay, I get that. Right? But that's a direct, you know, reaction from something that actually happened.
True. And he's saying that the passengers actually stopped him. But the bottom line is this. He got past the bullshit, they're saying. Okay, yeah. So he got past the bullshit.
Is quite funny when you think about it, because that means it's not even working.
No, that's right. When there's actually a lot of talk saying that a lot of the airport security measures are a bit ridiculous. But once again, that's also comes back to the argument that we completely overreacted on everything, putting all this stuff into place. They're actually saying that since the air marshals have been in place in the United States, and we don't have air marshals here, but the air marshals in the United States, they've done nothing. In fact, the air marshals are actually responsible for causing more problems than people they've stopped.
Yeah.
Because they're bored. Mm-hmm. It's like, and so you look at and just get this, something has to be done. We need to regain our sanity. We need to look at things in a clearer way and say, okay, you know what? The world actually isn't as horrible and as scary as we might think it is. Yes, there are bad people in it who will do bad things, but that doesn't mean that everybody is a bad person. That doesn't mean that every Muslim is a bad person. It doesn't mean that every, you know, religious person is a bad person. It just means that there are bad people. And those bad people will get stopped within the realms of what we have. 9/11, and we're not going to get into a whole 9/11 rant, but 9/11 was actually almost a comedy of errors in itself, though. They saw the planes coming. They didn't react fast enough. They didn't scramble the jets fast enough because they didn't believe it was going to happen to them. So, yes, we did know. We did need some tougher things in place to stop.
It was a wake-up call.
It was a wake-up call because people had gotten complacent. That doesn't mean that you change fundamental liberties. I don't think instigating a Patriot Act where we're allowed to start spying on our own citizens is the right thing to do. I don't think recording everybody's ISP traffic is the right thing to do. Because let me tell you, it's a very, very small step from going from tapping and recording all of your internet data to saying, you know what, I think everybody's phone should be tapped.
Well,
and every call should be recorded for the next 10 years, just in case.
Yeah, what I don't get, man, is that it's basically the same thing. I mean, if you're implementing this, I don't understand why it's something we're even talking about. Like, this is something that should be massively discussed with us before they just implement something like that. If someone tried to implement, instead of this, right, forget the internet for a moment and just say phones, right? If you use the word phones and you said, we're going to basically put a recording system on everyone's phone in Australia, this would become anarchy.
Everybody like, would lose everyone, their fucking mind. Is
everyone
what they
would
do.
Lose their mind. It's just because people don't understand the internet well enough that people aren't sitting there and yelling and screaming about this. This is such a huge... Every keystroke, everything that you write down, every letter
every
between you and your lovers, every single bank transaction, every single part of your life, because 90% of people now... Use Facebook, use this, use that. If you're marking every piece of my data, you have my life.
We got to get rid of the word data out of this equation.
Yeah.
And we got to start saying the government is going to have a copy of every letter you send to every person. That is one way of putting it, because that's what they're going to do. They're going to be recording email. So every letter, every Microsoft Messenger message, every Skype call, every piece of data, every message going out, every piece of communication between you and somebody else is going to be recorded and held on a server somewhere. And if, say, something happens, let's say you get a speeding fine. This is worst case scenario, but let's say you get a speeding fine and decide to fight it. You go to court. Well, they can now subpoena your records and basically say, because it's not, you no longer need a court order to get a tap.
No.
They just have to subpoena your records. They can subpoena your records and say, well, actually, we can prove that you're not such a nice person because you yelled at this person here and you did this here and you made this transaction here and you did this here.
And then you look at this porn.
And you look at this porn, and so you must be a pedophile, you know, because if you look at porn, you're obviously a pedophile, because that's the way that minds way people minds think at this point. I think it is just ridiculous. I think it is a small step from this to total fascism.
I mean, how many other countries are actually doing the same thing?
The European Union at this point are doing it. It's the subscribing members of the European Union. And I say shame on them too.
Yeah.
You know, and I say shame on them. But once again, saner minds prevail. The European Union says between 6 and 12 months. What does Australia do? We take everything to the nth degree. Australia goes, what a great system. Let's hold it forever. You know, let's hold it for 5 years, 10 years, you know? I mean, the statute of limitations on theft for robbing a bank is less than this.
Sorry, but that's so true.
Yeah, the statute of limitations for robbing a bank is 7 years. They want to hold your data longer than that. You know, it's like you look and go, this is insanity. I'm just, just really inflamed me. And I just read that last night and I just went, oh, God, what the hell? You know, it's just a ridiculous thing. Anyway, anybody else got?
No, dude, I'm raged out. Let's do something fun.
All right, let's do something fun, and let's talk about the Steve note. WWDC started this week, which is the Worldwide Developers Conference, which is Apple's personal conference. Now, be aware that any video we show or anything that we talk about from this point onwards is aimed at developers, not aimed at people. Okay, so you have to understand when they're cheering stuff on in these videos that we're going to show, it's because as developers, they look at it and go, yes, something we can use, you know? So you have to remember that the crowd that he had, and it was a very large crowd for his keynote, were bloggers, journalists, and developers. This is not necessarily the... And you can watch the entire Steve note, the entire WWDC keynote address on iTunes or on the Apple website. It is embedded. It's about an hour and a half, almost 2 hours long. We're not going to do the whole thing, obviously, but we are going to talk about iPhone 4. And the reason we're going to talk about iPhone 4, which was the subject of his keynote, is because, of course, we've covered a lot about iPhone 4 over the course of Geek Actually Tech and so forth. And we all saw the leaked pictures of the iPhone 4. Well, we have official pictures now. So here is the iPhone 4. And look, oh, surprise, surprise. It looks very much like the leaked pictures.
Did we get his response?
We did, actually. And I'm going to play a little video here. This is him introducing the iPhone. And I just love it. He does seem... I'm sure he was pissed at the time, and there is court cases pending, but every now and again, he does seem like he has a sense of humor. Here's Steve Jobs on stage introducing the iPhone 4. I'll leave the mics open.
We're introducing iPhone 4, the fourth generation iPhone. Now, this is really hot, and there are well over 100 new features, and we don't have time to cover all of them today, so I get to cover 8 of them with you. 8 new features of the iPhone 4. The first one, an all-new design. Now, stop me if you've already seen this.
Uh-huh.
Believe me, you ain't seen it. You've got to see this thing in person. It is one of the most beautiful designs you've ever seen.
I agree. Now, having
this
looked at it, it's just
sensational. Beyond the doubt, the most precise thing, one of the
Josh
most beautiful
wants.
Things we've ever made.
Dave wants.
Glass on the front and the rear, and stainless steel running around.
See,
and
I
the
thought
precision
it was aluminum,
of which
stainless
this is
steel
made
chassis
is beyond any consumer product we've ever seen. Its closest kin is like a beautiful old Leica camera. It's unheard of in consumer products today. Just gorgeous. And it's really thin. This is the new iPhone 4.
Now. All right, so I think it's nice to see that he has a sense of humor about the fact that the designs were leaked.
I don't actually think he has a sense of humor. I think that was written for him.
You might want to leave those in. We got a few more videos coming up. So, okay. Josh, so you'll hear the mics futzing around. Josh is plugging in at headphones. Keep those plugged in just in case, because we got a couple more. Now, what first thing I would say about that is that we all assumed that it was an aluminium chassis, because that's what they work in. But to find out that it's a stainless steel chassis is just beautiful. And the fact that the back isn't plastic, because I thought it was just that tempered plastic they use. But it's a glass front and back. So it's just gorgeous. I mean, this thing is beautiful. And there's actually a video on the Apple site, which we don't have here, where they actually show you the manufacturing process for that glass. Because, of course, your first thought is this thing's going to be as fragile as hell. But they're actually showing you the stress tests on the glass and stuff. It's amazingly strong. So it's an amazing looking thing. He's right. It is just a piece of design brilliance. And it's so much nicer than the original iPhone. Just in its sheer design. It's just lovely. Now, he did go on, though, and address, if you notice the images from the leaked photos and now these ones, there's little black cuts in the band around the outside, and he addresses what those cuts are. So here's a little bit. So first of all, let's just make sure we stay on track here for a second. He said he was going to introduce eight out of the 100 new features. First one was the new design. This is still included in that new design, which is on that stainless steel band, there's little black lines. Here's how he explained those. Now, I've actually got an issue with this, so we'll talk about that in just a second.
Now, because there have been a few photos of this around, people have asked, what's this? Some have even said, this doesn't seem like Apple. What are these lines in this beautiful stainless steel band? Well, it turns out there's not just one of them, there's three of them. And they are part of the entire structure of this phone. That stainless steel band that runs around is the primary structural element of the phone. And there are these three slits in it. It turns out this is part of some brilliant engineering, which actually uses the stainless steel band as part of the antenna system. And so one piece is Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, and GPS, and the other is UMTS and GSM. So it's got these integrated antennas right in the structure of the phone. It's never been done before, and it's really cool engineering.
I agree. It's very cool engineering, and it's very good because one of the major complaints with the iPhone has been reception. Its antenna is too small, and especially in America with the AT&T network, they've had a lot of problems. I haven't had so many problems here, but by increasing the size of the antenna and by making it an external antenna, it's going to get a lot better reception. However, the issue I have with this, and I mean, I have no facts to back this up. This is just a thought. In the olden days, when mobile phones first came out, a lot of people criticized the external antennas. Remember the little nubbin antenna on the Ericsson phones and so forth? And you could actually pick up paper clips with the antenna because it had such a magnet coming off of the Ericsson stubby antennas. You could pick up paper clips. And they're saying that, you know, that's where the most amount of radiation is emanating from. And now we're going to be holding that in our hand. Have they solved that problem or...
Well, we go out very differently, like especially the Bluetooth / GPS side of it. That's not really...
No, that's not going to be an issue. I'm talking about the cellular antenna, which is the majority of that band.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, interesting question, but I can't imagine Apple would be dumb enough to do something like that without researching it.
I don't know. Does the chat room have any thoughts on that? I mean, I'd like to know what people think about the idea of holding a raw antenna in their hand, in the palm of their hand. So we'll be talking on the phone and we'll be getting tumors on our thumbs. And I don't know. It's like, anyway, it's just a thought that occurred to me. And I don't know if there's any basis in fact to that, but as soon as I saw it, I went, wow, it's a great idea. But wait a minute. You know, it's just something that occurred to me. Anyway, so second thing he brought up, and I'm not going to bring it up on video here because really our video is too small to really do it justice anyway, but he talked about the Retina display. Now, the Retina display is the new display on the iPhone, which is a 326 DPI display, which is higher than our standard monitors that we're using on our computers. This thing is gorgeous. It is the idea, of course, is they're bringing the iBook Store to iPhone, and to be able to read on this thing, you need to have really smooth text, so they've really locked that down by making it incredibly sharp. They've also increased the camera, because it's now going to record 720p high-def video, so I guess they want a display that can actually display that. The display is awesome, and there's been already talk out in the industry where people are saying, oh, but he said it was like, you know, more than the human eye can see, and mathematically that's not true. Who cares? The display looks awesome. Yeah. I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
When I hear things like that, I just look at people and go, I'm sorry, do you know a better screen?
Yeah.
Have you seen a better screen on a phone? Then why are you complaining?
Yeah, all I can think is you've got nothing better to do with your time, really. Third thing he wanted to bring up was that it has the A4 processor in it, which is going to make this thing rocket fast, because the iPad is rocket fast. Same processor. Oh, yes. And he actually does a breakaway in the demonstration where he shows you the inside of it. And the thing is tiny and yet so powerful. The fourth thing he brought up, and I do have video on this one because this is just cool as fucking hell. It's got a gyroscope in it. So with the accelerometer and with the compass, they've now added an electronic gyroscope. And let him explain why.
A three-axis gyro, which is fantastic. Pitch, roll, and yaw. Also rotation around gravity. And we've tied the gyro and the accelerometer and even the compass together to provide six-axis motion sensing. And we've got some new core motion APIs that you can call that give you extremely precise position information. And it's perfect for gaming. And one of the reasons it's perfect is because it's built into every iPhone 4, so you know it's there. So what I'd love to do now is give you a demo of this.
Oh, yeah, baby. Demo
and
that
since
thing.
This demo does not require the network.
We'll come back to that.
I should be okay. So this is a little app that we wrote. And this is being run with the accelerometer now. And as you see with the accelerometer, I can tilt it from side to side. Right,
so you're showing like a
forwards.
Set of blocks for our audio.
And,
like
but I can't,
blocks.
It doesn't move when I rotate around gravity. And the positioning is good, but not super precise. So now by tapping the word accelerometer, it's going to change to the gyro. And now I get much more precise movement here. And as you see, it rotates around gravity.
That's cool. So,
that is very fucking cool.
And he plays this game for
so
a bit.
I'm going to play this game here.
Where he knocks the blocks out. It's very cool.
Off.
And we might end this because he just goes on with this for some time. But it's a really, really good demonstration of the gyroscope.
Maybe I'll take this one out.
And if you want to see that, I definitely recommend watching the keynote just for his gyroscope display because it is pretty impressive. Actually, for his gyroscope display and for the one we're about to show now because, of course, the number five on his list of eight things was, of course, the 5-megapixel camera. So they've increased the camera to a 5-megapixel. And, of course, everybody immediately jumped up and down and said, but, you know, some of the Android phones out there at the moment have 8-megapixel cameras. Why is the iPhone always behind? He actually did address that. And he had very, very sound reasoning. The megapixels, and as a photographer, I'm going to address this. The megapixels of a camera are about print size, not about quality of photo. Okay, the higher your megapixels, the larger you can print. The average phone photo is for things like Facebook and stuff. Yeah. It's not for printing. Mm. So a 5-megapixel camera will quite happily print to about A4 size. I mean, it's a fairly decent size print, but it doesn't need to be any bigger than that for the purposes of what a phone camera is for.
Dude, if you want the best photography I have taken is on a 3.2-megapixel absolutely camera. In fact, and you know what? I can blow that up to about A3 size, and people still barely even
notice. And the first Nikons were only 3 megapixels when they came out. So the 5-megapixel camera, but what they have done is that they have actually used a backside illuminated sensor. So they've actually really worked on the sensor itself. Backside illuminated sensor means it works really well in low light situations, which is, he said, most people who are using their cameras are using them at party situations and what have you. They don't have a lot of light to work with. And so this will actually improve the quality of the photograph coming off the sensor. Also, he said, they didn't reduce the size. Because what happens with camera phones is because the sensor is so small already, because of the nature of being in a phone, as they increase the megapixels, they reduce the pixel density of – they reduce the size of each pixel because they need to pack more in. They've actually kept the pixel size exactly the same as the 3-megapixel. So it's still a 1.75 micron pixel, but there's now 5 megapixels worth rather than 3. So they've actually increased that. It's got a 5x digital zoom. It's still got its tap-to-zoom features. And, of course, the video is now also has tap-to-focus on video, which is very nice. It didn't have that before. And it's now 720p high def, as we said. So it's very nice. And it has an LED flash next to the camera, which can also just be used as a constant illumination for the video.
That's so cool.
So it's actually a very, very, very nice upgrade to the camera. And it has a front-facing camera for video chatting, but we'll come back to that in just a second. The other thing that got announced in the entire camera section of it was the fact that they have written, like they did with Pages and Keynote, they've written an iPhone version of iMovie. Which you can buy for a couple of bucks, apparently, on the App Store. And here's a demonstration of a movie that was made on the iPhone iMovie. So this was entirely, the guy actually said at the beginning, I can't remember if I caught the very beginning of this video, but he actually says it was shot, edited, rendered, and output from the iPhone.
And this is the new one?
The new one, the new iPhone 4. And this is the video he got.
Seriously, cheesiest music.
Oh, look, it's a cheesy video, but it's showing you the demonstration of it.
Yeah, it's great.
Titles, transitions, music, adding stills. I love Steve Jobs' comment on this stuff.
That's iMovie for iPhone 4. Thanks very much.
And here comes Jobs. Once again, proving he has a little bit of a sense of humor.
Or that he just has really good writers.
Or very good writers.
Isn't that awesome? So iMovie for iPhone. And you'll be able to buy this right on your phone for $4.99 if we approve it.
I told you.
Oh, man, that's so evil. You're not supposed to laugh about it. You are the evil empire in this. You're not allowed to laugh at that.
I think that's quality. I think that's stunning. All right, so the comment he made about networking, this is the last thing. Oh, no, Alan, very quickly. Number 7 on the list was iPhone OS is being renamed. It is now just going to be called iOS. So it'll be iOS 4. As he said, it's on iPads, it's on iPod Touches, it's on phones. It's time to get rid of the phone out of there. And so it's just iOS, which they licensed from Cisco, apparently. Cisco already owned it. But they licensed it and they paid for it and it's theirs now. And number 8, of course, was iBooks is coming to the iPhone and they're updating it. It's going to have all the things that we wanted in iBooks in the first place, and this will be in the iPad as well. It's going to have bookmarks, PDF support, you know, and all those other things that we've been looking for, annotations, and all those things. Everybody said, why doesn't this do this? Which would make it perfect for textbooks for schools. And of course, number 8 on the list was he did the big reveal of iAds, which we talked about on Geek Actually Tech. He just made it official. The stat on iAds was actually kind of funny, though, because he said that as of July 1st, iAds launches. They've already started selling the ads, and they've already sold $60 million worth of ads to be shown on iAds. Now, if that figure seems, well, it's, you know, advertising, it's an interesting figure. JP Morgan released a study a few days ago, wasn't that long ago, but a week ago, 2 weeks ago, that basically said the total amount of money spent on advertising this year, on online advertising this year, was predicted to be $250 million. Mm. So that's a fair chunk of that market that they're already selling ads for. So iAds is going to be a success, I think. And I think it's, you know, from what we've seen, what we looked at in the original demos on Geek Actually Tech, it looks like it's actually kind of harmless, and I don't mind that. So that's all right. Now, just on a humorous note, and we're going to finish tech off. In a humorous note, I know the tech section has been a bit long, but Steve Notes tend to do that to us. So we've kept everything else kind of light. Just on the last note, Steve had a very rare event take place, which is he had a demonstration failure. Now, Steve Jobs doesn't have demonstration failures. And as somebody's pointed out on Buzz Out Loud, they would love to have known who got fired in the car on the way back to the complex over this. But basically, as it turns out, he tried to do a Wi-Fi demonstration and he tried to bring up a website on the phone and he couldn't do it. So he had to move on to something else because it just wouldn't load. He came out a little bit later on and explained that it wasn't that their Wi-Fi was slow. It wasn't that their Wi-Fi was in trouble. It was the fact that there were too many access points running in the auditorium. And let him explain it. He comes out. This is about halfway through. He comes out. He's finally been told what the problem is. And Steve Jobs got all dad on the audience. All right. So he comes out and he does the dad thing.
Now, before I begin number 6, our guys were running around like crazy backstage, as you might imagine. And we figured out why my demo crashed. Because there are 570 Wi-Fi base stations operating in this room. Okay? We can't deal with that. So we have two choices. Either I've got some more demos that are really great that I'd like to show you. So we either turn off all this stuff and see the demos, or we give up and I don't show you the demos. Would you like to see the demos or not? Okay. So here's the deal. Let's turn up the lights in the hall. Several hundred of these are these MiFi things too, by the way. So all you bloggers need to turn off your base stations, turn off your Wi-Fi. Every notebook, I'd like them to put them down on the floor. And all of you look around, I'd like you to police each other. If you want to see the demos, shut all your laptops, turn off all these MiFi base stations, and put them on the floor, please. Come on, look around you.
Look at how disgruntled everyone looks.
Well, like, these guys are all live blogging the event, and suddenly they're told to stop.
I mean, I'm not, I think bloggers have a right to blog, but if we want to see the demos, we're not going to be able to do it unless we turn off all of these MiFi base stations.
You just get a bit of wireless connection.
Set them on the floor.
Well, apparently he's got like one of the best Wi-Fi connections going, but what actually, it wasn't a bandwidth issue.
Yeah,
it was explained in another tech podcast I was listening to. It was actually crosstalk. You've got 570 base stations in a room.
That's true. Yeah.
And 570 base stations are not meant to work in that close proximity
to
each other.
I'm surprised so many were, actually.
I'm surprised they were working at all. I'm surprised anybody had connection because these things are all interfering with each other. The channel numbers are all running over each other. And so basically, it wasn't the fact that he didn't have internet connection. It was the fact that his base station couldn't get a channel of what was going on because of all these little MiFi adapters. These things are not meant to work in that close proximity to each other, you know?
It's kind of interesting, though, because it makes me wonder whether Steve Jobs, like, as much as, you know, I'm as much a fan of the idea that he fired someone, I actually think maybe people may have missed out, you know, sort of getting fired this time, because if you came up with an explanation that good, I mean, like...
That's true, and he may have been patting somebody on the back for that explanation.
Yeah.
But can you imagine they're sitting in the back room, obviously scanning for Wi-Fi, and they're going, what the hell? And they're counting the base stations. You know? It's like, that's awesome. He actually made jokes about it throughout the rest of the keynote. Every time he did something, he was doing a... because, of course, the one more thing was this FaceTalk. It's video conferencing on the iPhone, which is pretty neat in itself. But in Australia, we've already kind of got video conferencing, so it's nothing new. But in America, it's still kind of it's something they don't really do that much. But anyway, the point is that he's doing having a conversation with somebody on the face chat, and he's making fun of it, like, because there's a little bit of lag on it. He's going, now if those bloggers would just start turning off, he just kept going on about it for the rest of the show now. So anyway, so that's Steve Note. The new iPhone is very, very sweet. I cannot wait for it to come out. I really am looking forward to this new device. I think some of the new features on it are awesome. Somebody in our chat room, I won't say somebody because that's kind of rude. Who was it that mentioned the iBooks? Was it you, Rob? Somebody was saying that with the Kindle, you can be reading on one device and then pick up another device and fire up the Kindle app, and it'll know exactly where you were in your book from between devices, and you can't do that on iBooks. You will. The update to iBooks also has that feature.
Exactly.
So the update on iBooks. iBooks, I think, to me personally, it feels to me like iBooks was rushed.
Yeah.
It feels like they're getting the iPad out. They had their release date. They wanted it at the bookstore. They didn't have it quite polished yet, but they just needed to get it out there with the iPad because the iPad, the iBooks.
Dear God, Apple's going to become like every other company. Start yeah. releasing
well, at least it doesn't
products.
Crash. It just doesn't have the features.
So far as I know.
But the iBooks, it's already getting an update. So iBooks is getting an update faster than any product I've ever seen. So when the iBooks iBook update comes out, which will be the end of June, then hopefully you'll find all the bookmarking and exchanging and everything else that you'll be able to do. So good. All right. All that being said, let's get rid of Steve Jobs. Let's get into some entertainment news. Oh, no, wait. We got one more thing. Last week we reported Sam Mendes was directing an iPhone ad.
Yes, I remember.
And we kind of went, pardon? Why? What? You know, what do they need for? I've got the ad. Cool. So here it is. It was actually released the same day as the Steve Note. And, where's the ad? Hold on. I had the ad. Where is it? I've lost the ad now. I thought I had the ad here. Hold on. I can just quickly throw this on the board. All right. If the board goes dead, that means we've just crashed. Because I'm adding to the board as on the fly. And if we add to the board on the fly, it has been known to crash in those situations. But yes, no, I have the, I had the... FaceTime. Here we are. Okay, good. All right. So if this doesn't crash, it hasn't crashed. Okay. Here is Sam Mendes directing an Apple ad. Now I just look at this ad and I go, any director could have made this ad. I don't know why they needed to hire an Academy Award winning director to direct this.
Oh, when you smiling, when you smiling, the whole world smiles with you, yes, when you laughing, when you laughing. Yes, the sun comes shining through, but when you're crying.
I'm sorry, I'm bored. It is the slowest, dreariest, most boring ad ever made.
It's just got no pacing.
And it doesn't feel like an Apple ad.
Exactly.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like an Apple ad. And speaking of Apple ads, the official I'm a Mac, I'm a PC ads have now been retired. That's why
Thank God.
They have been retired.
I'm sorry, but they were done. They were done and dusted. They had been parodied to death. Yeah. Everybody had done the piece. It's over.
They officially retired those ads a few weeks ago, and now we're doing this. Dudes, where you get? Who's your marketing agent? This isn't the same advertising agent as the Microsoft ones, is it? Because this is terrible.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're thinking. Anyway, I'm sure they're trying to do the whole FaceTime. Look, isn't it nice? We can sweetly talk to each other. And the guy's looking at the ultrasound and the this and that. It's like boring. And it goes for a minute and a half.
Yeah.
It's the longest TV ad ever made. It's like an epic. No, bored. Bored, not good. Apple, not impressed.
Not good.
All right, film and TV. Let's do film and TV because John Carpenter... The legend, the man, the weirdest looking man in history.
My God, he's like half white and half looks like the Asian guy from Kill Bill.
He does. Actually, no, he looks a lot like David Carradine in Kill Bill right there as well.
It's kind of a collaboration of both, isn't it?
It is. Anyway, so John Carpenter, who
all he
is...
needs is a giant beard now.
John Carpenter, who is one of my favorite directors of all time, although he hasn't directed anything really good lately. He is the man who is responsible for Halloween, The Fog, The Thing, Escape from New York, Big Trouble in Little China. Do I need to go on?
No,
we get
no,
the idea. We get the idea. This man, I would have watched direct The Phone Book at one point in his career. In his later years, he directed things like In the Mouth of Madness and They Live and so forth. And it hasn't been quite up to the same sort of standard. Fun, but not the same sort of standard. He is been in semi-retirement for the last, oh, I don't know, probably decade. He did come out of semi-retirement briefly to direct an episode of Masters of Horror. In fact, he directed two episodes over 2 years. And I have to say that his episode of Masters of Horror in season one, Cigarette Burns, is probably the best episode ever made.
And you know what? Almost stands alone as its own film.
Yes,
that's
it
the
does.
Thing I love about it is like when I finished that one, I was like, wow, I didn't even feel like that was an episode. That
absolutely. Was... And if you haven't seen the Cigarette Burns episode...
And can stand decent horror, because let me tell you, this
disturbing.
Is not for the faint of heart. Yeah, it is a seriously... twisted.
It's a seriously whacked out piece of work. And he came back and directed a second episode in the second season, which wasn't as successful, but it was okay. But Josh looks like a terrorist. What? Hi, Digital.
It's the beard.
Sorry, it's a chat room.
For those people that listen to the audio show, I now have a beard.
Again. You had a beard when you started with us.
Yeah. Again. Yeah.
Again. Anyway, John Carpenter is returning to cinema. He is actually directing a film called Fangland, so he's returning to vampire films as well. It'll be very interesting to see if he still has got it, basically, is the question. So he's also got another feature in production called The Ward, starring Amber Heard. So, you know, we should be seeing a little bit out of Carpenter over the next year or so. So I am looking forward to it because, you know, I really hope he can bring it back. I really hope he can do something again because I really like Carpenter. Anyway, going down our list of entertainment things, we're going to move pretty fast through these. Fright Night is getting a remake. For those who haven't seen Fright Night or don't know what Fright Night is, it's an 80s horror slash comedy, and it looks something like this.
What would you do if you accidentally discovered the house next door was occupied by something not human? Something horrifying. Something unspeakably evil. No one believes you.
Mom, I didn't have a nightmare.
Not your mom.
They did kill a girl over there.
Not your girlfriend.
Charlie, is this some sort of a trick to get me back?
Not even the police.
Look, I know it's crazy. I know that, but look, Lieutenant!
It knows that you know. You'll do anything to protect yourself. But it will do anything to protect its secret. Being scared. This could be the night of your life.
Now, I loved Fright Night when it came out. Absolutely adored it. And it was followed by a really shitty sequel, which was just terrible. But I loved the first one, especially Roddy McDowall as the guy. The idea of them making...
Shitty sequels? Really?
I hated the sequel. I hated Fright Night 2. I thought it was such a stupid film.
Don't talk to me about shitty sequels. I watched Freddy 5 last night. Okay, that thing is so bad.
All I can say is why.
I don't know either.
All right. Now, this is where things get a little bit exciting, though, because we heard originally that there was going to be this remake of Fright Night, and I got kind of scared because I thought, why are we redoing this? Why would we be looking at this? But then we found out that Colin Farrell has been cast as the vampire. So I kind of like that idea. Toni Collette is in it, who I don't really care because I don't like Toni Collette that much. But then we found out this week, and the reason why I brought this back up is the fact that Christopher Mintz-Plasse has joined the cast. Red Mist from Kick-Ass, for those who don't remember. And David Tennant.
I'm in. Oh, yeah. Why didn't you lead with that? You could have got me excited about it just by saying his name.
So I'm assuming David Tennant is taking the role of Roddy McDowall as the vampire hunter. That's an assumption. But I'm in. Put David Tennant in. I'm in.
Dude, you put him in anything. You put him in that iPhone ad and I'd watch the whole thing.
Oh, dear. All right. So that's the Fright Night sequel. We'll embed that video. We'll embed any videos that see here except for the Apple keynote. You'll have to go find that yourself. But we'll embed all the little videos and so forth on Geek Actually at the end of today. Now, just an apology for the people who follow the blog. It's been a little bit light on stories this week. It's been a weird week, but we're going to get better at that. All right. Now, in the history of bad ideas, I'm just going to swap these around because we just played a video, so I'll do this one first. In the history of bad ideas, this is probably the worst, or one of the worst in some time. Tom Cruise is developing a film based on this character, Les Grossman, who he played in Tropic Thunder. Now, the reason why I say this is an incredibly bad idea, and I think you guys will agree with this, is that he's a funny bit part. It's a funny cameo.
It was a funny return to form. That was just like, it was a, hey guys, look, I'm a weirdo, but I can still act.
And in small doses, the Les Grossman character was very funny because of the surrounding things happening around him. Now, he made an appearance as Les Grossman at the MTV MTV Movie Awards this year. Those videos are embedded at geekactually.com. You can have a look where he actually tells off the Twilight boys. Mm-hmm. And like at one point, he's talking to Rob Pattinson, who says that, you know, he's going to go for this role, so he might actually wash his hair. And Les Grossman tells him off, saying, "You can't wash your hair because that's your money making tool." And, you know, blah, no, it goes on and on and on. It's quite funny, quite amusing. And you're just still going to go, but once again, small little bits.
Yeah.
To put Les Grossman in a film and actually build a film around this character, I think is just going to be obnoxious. And so I just look and go, Tom Cruise has made this nice return to form. Yeah. Now go on and do something.
Yeah.
Don't just go. It's almost like he went, oh, that worked. Let's do more of that, you know? And unfortunately, I think he's missed the point that it works because it is short little bits. What do you think? You saw Tropic Thunder, didn't you, Shane?
Yeah, maybe he'll take this character back to Oprah, perhaps.
Les Grossman jumping on the couch. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, no, I have to say that even in his small role, by about the third time he was on screen, I was over it. Like, the bit where he's doing the dance in the room.
Yeah, the dance was a bit much.
I was just standing there just going, just fuck off now. You've done what you have to do. Leave. And now the very idea and concept of this becoming a movie is just disgusting.
Hey, Rob in our chat rooms is a 2-hour cameo. What's wrong with that? And, Digital Angel, perfect. He's too cocky for his own good.
Yeah,
that's pretty much sums up Tom Cruise in a nutshell. Look, and I'll go on record and say that I think Tom Cruise is a good actor. I think he's done some really good work. He's a weirdo, and the guy has got some serious issues, but, you know, we don't want to let his personal issues get in the way of what is on screen. And we try and separate that if we can. But I find with Tom Cruise that his personal is getting in the way of his performances on screen. Before he was completely whacked out, he did some really good work, and I'd like to see him come back. I thought Les Grossman in Tropic Thunder was a good return to form. I want to see what else he's got. Show me what else you've got. In fact, I'm looking forward to more and more. I'm looking forward to Night and Day, which I know Josh is looking forward to quite a lot.
Yeah, so. Yeah, no, I am. I'm looking forward to that. I reckon it's going to be good.
Fair enough. All right, we have a new trailer for The Sorcerer's Apprentice. Now, I've got to say, The Sorcerer's Apprentice is one where I saw the first trailer and I went, oh, God. And then I saw the second trailer and I went, not
too bad.
And I'm still kind of in that camp. We're going to see it in a couple of weeks now. It's not too far away. Here's trailer number 3. This just got released this week. See what you think of this.
Everything you thought you knew about the world is about to change.
Oh! 2 weeks ago, I was just a normal college kid.
Let's get it bumping. Thank you.
And then he showed up.
Hello, Dave.
You are going to be a force for good and a very important sorcerer.
What?
All over the world, dark forces are gathering.
Hello, Balthazar.
You've been chosen to stop them.
Sock.
Let's go train.
I'm gonna give you the basics.
Weapon of choice.
Plasma bolt.
I got one.
And again.
I did it.
Something about you seems different.
I'm a sorcerer.
Well, that's new.
This should be a lot of fun.
Great men have always been called. This is your calling.
No way.
That's my car.
Whoops.
This is crazy.
But it is fun.
Now it's my turn.
Every sorcerer needs a nice pair of pointy shoes.
These are old man shoes.
Excuse me?
I love them. A lot.
Old man shoes. I'm looking forward to some big, dumb Disney Bruckheimer entertainment.
Dude,
which
absolutely
is what we didn't get with Prince of Persia and what I really hope this will be. So the only thing this film's got going against it is the fact that it's directed by John Turteltaub, who directed the two National Treasure films, which I liked the first one, but I thought the second one was terrible. And
if you average it out, though, they were
one
stupid
to one, one
fun.
For one.
Yeah, it was a stupid film, so I don't know.
The effects work looks awesome. And I just look at that and I go, it's got to be Industrial Light and Magic's work.
Northeast got up in the tree. He's made himself a little scale. And he's actually given us where in the scale he is currently excited
about. Well, Northeast, that's above half. That's not bad.
That's quite good.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. So, yes, I think. And also the guy who stars in it, whose name has eluded me right now, not Nick Cage, the young kid. he was the voice in How to Train Your Dragon. And I thought he was quite funny in that, too. So. Dude,
I'm in.
We'll be there. We're going to go see it.
I'm definitely going to go watch that one.
I noticed the Digital Angel basically put pass. No. Anyway, it's a Disney movie, but so is Pirates of the Caribbean. And Pirates of the Caribbean proved to me that Disney can make a really fun, good film without really just pandering to children.
It looks to be that same kind of world as well, that kind of like borderlining adult, but still kind of kiddie. Like,
true.
You know, enough
and
adult.
And let's not forget, Tron is Disney as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I've got no problem with it being Disney as such. It's who makes it for Disney is the bigger issue. Dudes, Muppets are back. Yeah. Now, I've been wondering about this for the last year, in fact, because we kept seeing YouTube videos popping up where they did like the Muppets doing Bohemian Rhapsody and stuff like all these high-def videos. And they were hysterical and they were really well done. And I'm thinking, why? Oh, Rob. Ooh. Get out.
Rob is fired from my chat room.
Anyway, yay, Muppets, says Northy. Absolutely. And so I've been wondering what's going on with Muppets and why there's been this big resurgence in all these little clips. Well, it turns out that the new Muppet movie is going to hit cinemas Christmas 2011. They're making a great big return. And as we reported a few weeks ago, it is being written by Jason Segel, who, as we know, is a huge Muppets fan, because we've seen Forgetting Sarah Marshall. He references the Muppets constantly throughout Forgetting Sarah Marshall. Yes, and it's also being directed by, looks like it's being directed by Nicholas Stoller, who directed Sarah Marshall. So this could be a lot of fun. I just love the fact that in this article on Slash Film, where I got this from, it actually says that some of the titles that they were thinking about at one point were going to be... oh, crap. Where are they? Here it is. The cheapest Muppet movie ever made. they were going to call it. There was another one here as well, which I can't find now. Anyway, but it was quite funny that they were toying around with the idea of, you know, trying to make a very low budget, bringing it back and so forth. So the only thing that will be missed in another Muppet movie, of course, will be the voice of Jim Henson. But there is a good Kermit voice out there. We've heard it. I think it's one of the other members of the staff at it's not his son. His son does somebody else. But there is somebody who can do Kermit, but it's just not quite the same. Jim Henson was the heart of Kermit.
You could get Stubby from our show. He does a perfect Kermit.
Does he really?
Perfect Kermit.
We'll have to get him on tape and send it into them.
Yeah, yep.
All right, we're going to finish this up. We've got two quick ones. First one is, I'm just going to swap these around again because of the distance between videos. We've got rumors, and these are very strange rumors, but according to Ain't It Cool News, they're kind of almost confirmed. And I say almost confirmed because they don't have a source on these, but they're basically saying this is very strong inside Fox information. But basically they're saying the new Die Hard movie is in production, or is in pre-production, I should say, and it's going to be called Die Hard 24/7. Go figure.
I'm sorry you expected me to comment on that. I just dry reached a little.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out why that. But the one that was really going to make you dry reach is the reboot of Fantastic Four, which will be called Fantastic Four Reborn. All right, so there's your semi-confirmed rumor news out there, which is just kind of strange. We're going to finish off entertainment news with this little video. This got leaked, or not leaked, this got released on Entertainment Tonight this week. I have heavily abridged it because it's actually a very long piece, but all I really want, I'm going to leave the mics open so that we can talk throughout it and describe what's going on for our audio listeners. Entertainment Tonight was allowed on the set of Thor. And they've actually taken footage of behind-the-scenes stuff on Thor. We've been talking about Thor a lot, so I thought this was relevant. There's also a little bit of the interviews in here with Kenneth Branagh and stuff. I cut a lot of the interviews out because it was kind of really light Entertainment Tonight bullshit, you know. But what we really want is the images. One of the images you will see is Anthony Hopkins as Odin with his eye patch. He comes flying past here at one point. And you'll also see the thing that I thought most impressive, though, was Chris Hemsworth, the Australian boy who's playing Thor, because he has pumped up. The guy is enormous. And look at the size of him for this. And the, in fact, they actually talked to Kenneth Branagh about how big he is now. So here is the on-set stuff from Entertainment Tonight.
I am 30 miles outside of Santa Fe, New Mexico, and it kind of feels like the middle of nowhere. But currently, it is the home to Hollywood's newest heartthrob, the man who is being turned into the ancient god of thunder, Thor. So what's it like being Thor?
It's pretty exciting, you know. The whole thing is so.
Is it just me, or does he look a lot like Heath Ledger nowadays?
Whoa!
It's been really fun. Yeah.
You're awesome. Action!
Hey, over here. Do you feel pressure because how well these franchises have done? Iron Man blowing up, Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I mean, you're the next guy in line. Do you feel that pressure?
Absolutely. I mean, it's. I think you feel
an
active pressure in any film to make it work. But with, you know, something like Marvel Studios, and it comes with
same
history.
Doing on
not only the films have been a great success, but, you know, years of comic books,
if you could
stories have been written.
Like, grab that
been
kind of support
that,
from people.
Yeah,
many, like,
yeah.
being tuned to the next.
Now look at this, a good indication of how big he's gotten. Look at this.
Chris is a big boy now.
He sure is, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He took seriously the challenge that had to be taken on by whoever was going to play Thor to find this combination we wanted of a sort of Herculean strength. And gosh, he's strong. We had him doing all sorts of physical feats on it. And some of them just practical, lifting people up, lifting two people up. Doing it for a long time over the course of a day. And it's... we were talking about... I sort of said... The other day I said, oh, we've got to do this, and you've got to get your shirt off. And they said, do you mind doing this? He said, do I mind? He said, I've spent 6 months getting into shape for this. No, I don't mind.
It's like, why would I mind taking my shirt off when I've buffed myself up like this?
Seriously, you spend 6 months getting the perfect body. I mean, like you wouldn't want to show it off.
Yeah, I think it's spooky, though, how much he sounds and looks like Heath Ledger now. Though.
Yeah,
Chris
Hemsworth sound is
Chris
is
Hemsworth
like...
didn't look or sound like Heath Ledger in Star Trek.
No.
But now you look at him talking in his natural voice and you go, wow, that's creepy. That is actually creepy. It's like looking at his younger brother or something. It's very, very, because cut from the same cloth. All right. Sorry?
Can I quickly say something just before you finish with entertainment news? I just came across this the other day as I was going through my gaming news, Dennis Hopper has just recently passed away.
Yeah, we covered that last week. We did a retrospective. Okay. Very, very sad. Yeah. And we also covered the third loss.
There's a fourth one sometime this week. Someone else died, and I've totally forgotten.
Well, it's not fourth. It'll start a three. It'll start another three, you see. So now,
oh, God.
So now you got two more to go. See,
no! This is not a good time to kill people off. There's too many important movies I care about right now.
So,
can't afford actors to be disappearing.
That's true. It's man, everyone is dying. Yes, Digital Angel, it feels like, but we go through these patches.
Mm.
Do you remember it was like last year we had a patch like this where we lost like five in or six in a row? It's just it's like seasonal. It's a very strange thing. Does Marvel own Fantastic Four again, says Rob? No. Fox still owns Fantastic Four. Fox still owns Fantastic Four, Daredevil, and Elektra, and X-Men, and Sony still owns Spider-Man, and they will until their options run out. The way they keep their options alive is they have to keep making films.
Which is why we get all these shitty reboots.
What'll happen is at the end of the option period, they say, oh, damn, we're about to lose it. Let's just rush one out the door, which is exactly what happened with Anne Rice's Queen of the Damned. When Interview of the Vampire came out, which was a quality film, it was great. Warner Brothers held the rights to the Interview with the Vampire series, the Vampire Chronicles. And what happened was they got to the end of their option. They had taken so long to get a sequel off the ground that they just rushed Queen of the Damned into production, and it was crap, but they got to hold on to the option.
Yep.
And this is what everybody is afraid of, because the Superman option is coming up like next year. Yeah. So if they don't get a Superman film in, Warner Bros. Is going to lose all the rights to Superman. So guaranteed you see a Superman film going to production in the next 12 months. Mm. Warner Bros. Isn't going to want to let that go. And that's why last week we played that Marvel video in the after show. It was not the week before last, where it's basically saying they will keep making them, you know, reboots and rehashes and sequels forever just to hold on to these options.
Yeah.
Until somebody buys them out. I wish it wasn't the way it was, but that's the way it is, because I really wish we could have all the Marvel characters back to Marvel Studios, because they seem to be the only people who understand how to make their characters. Okay. We're going to go into our feature film review this week, which is, of course, The A-Team. Ready? All right. We're going to go into The A-Team, and we're going to review this. Before we go into this, I think what we need to do is say that in the after show, for anybody who leaves us during spoilers and stuff like that, in the after show today, we have got two iPads in studio, and we have three iPhones in studio, and we're going to be doing iPad demonstrations and talking about the iPads. Yes, we got our iPads, and we're going to be talking about them in the after show. So the entire after show is going to be about iPads. So if you are watching live, great, stick with us, and we'll be talking about the iPads. If you're listening to the audio show, the audio of this, and of course you won't be able to see it, but we will have the replay on the site. We will talk it through, though, and you'll be able to hear that on Wednesday, okay, when it comes out on the feed. All right, all that being said, we're going to get into some A-Team. Now, bring up this graphic right here, and we're going to say the A-Team is directed by Joe Carnahan. The film was written by Joe Carnahan, Brian Bloom, and Skip Woods, and is based on characters created by Frank Lupo and Stephen J. Cannell. The film stars Liam Neeson, Bradley Cooper, Charles Hook Hopley, the man, Jessica Biel, Quentin Rampage Jackson, Brian Bloom, and Patrick Wilson. Now, the synopsis I've written is pretty light, because really the story is neither here nor there. And basically, it's a remake of the classic Stephen J. Cannell, Frank Lupo action series about a group of elite soldiers who are framed for a crime they didn't commit and now fight as freedom fighters while trying to clear their names. That's the series. The movie version ups the ante and has them involved in a CIA sting operation that involves treasury plates that would allow bad guys to print their own money and other convoluted nonsense. However, the film does just become the quote-unquote, they are framed and escape to catch the bad dudes and clear their names trope, and is pretty much what you expect from there. Mm-hmm. Which I spelled there wrong on my notes. Go figure. Anyway, so look, the plot is actually quite convoluted and probably more complicated than it actually needs to be. It is the A-Team, after all. And before we get into reviewing this, let's have a look at the trailer really quickly. So this is the new A-Team.
This court is rendering guilty verdicts for this Alpha Unit, or A-Team, and incarceration in maximum security facilities for 10 years.
We are innocent.
Where's the plan, boss?
You actually sound worried.
Those men were your responsibility. Find them.
Hell no. I ain't stepping foot in any type of aircraft.
Man up! Get in the plane! We gotta finish the escape! Man up and get in there!
Putting the team back together.
So how do you plan on stopping
them? Don't sweat them.
This just got exciting.
I'm BA. You're gonna be unconscious.
Just a heck of a beautiful place. Just a timeshare. I'd love to get in.
Good morning.
He tried to escape by jump-starting an ambulance
with a defibrillator.
Clear.
My kind of guy.
I told you the mission wasn't over.
What are we talking about? Clean records?
We were set up.
It's payback time.
Oh, hell yeah, Hannibal.
They are the best, and they specialize in the ridiculous.
Give me a minute, I'm good.
Light them up, kill them all!
Give my team an hour, we're unbeatable.
That line,
best
man,
line in the so entire good. Film. All right, before we go any further, Josh, you have breaking news.
Oh, yeah, just so that everyone in the gaming world knows, we've just been alerted to the fact that, unfortunately, Valve have actually pulled out of E3 completely. So it changed originally from being Portal 2 stuff to being a special announcement.
So this follows on for those who are saying, oh, I've already heard that. No, this isn't the same. Portal 2 was announced as being delayed.
Yeah.
This is new.
This is new. Portal 2 would still theoretically be shown at E3. There's no reason it wouldn't. Mm. What this does lead me to believe, and I'm just making, you know, rumors at the moment, but what this leads me to believe is that this could possibly be something like a new engine. There is no way you would pull out a half-finished engine and not show off even a section of gameplay. Mm. There's just no way that you would do that. So I believe that this could mean that they're developing a new engine. I mean, it just, nothing else to me makes sense. It wouldn't make sense to me to pull out and not show something unless you have something which is.
Although
not
I have to
ready.
Say, I am surprised that Valve. Sorry, this is a bit right in the middle of our movie review, but it just came up. I'm surprised though that they wouldn't want to be there to at least show off stuff like Steam on Mac and, you know, and all the other things that they've got going.
No. Because I mean, those are released, so they don't have to. They can save themselves the trouble. And remember, they've always got, like, now with gaming being as big as it is, they'll just hold off until TCG at the end of the year.
Right. Fair enough.
TGS.
This also could add weight to rumors kicking around that the Half-Life is closer than we think it might be. So they might be rebuilding engines and stuff like that. So I don't know. It's a very odd thing to do this close to E3. When's E3 start? Monday, right? Mm-hmm. Pulling out a day and a half before E3 is a really radical move. Yeah. But anyway, because you got to think, it's still going to cost them a fortune because they're going to be able to fill those tables. They still have to pay for it all. Mm-hmm. So it's cost them an arm and a leg. But anyway, go figure it. That's what their choice. Let them do what they have to do. Yeah. All right. Let's get back on to this film review while we're here. Okay. So we've already talked about the cast. We've talked about the plot line. We've seen the trailer. Josh, let me ask you, was it as bad as you expected?
No. Admittedly, I went into it a lot less. If for the first time, I think, ever, I went in with less of a nasty feeling than you did, because I remember we talked before we went in and I said, based on what I've seen, this film is going to fall somewhere between Charlie's Angels 1 and Charlie's Angels 2. So neither being great films, but both being...
Well, Charlie's Angels 1 at least being a fun film, Angels 2 being
Charlie's
awful.
Just being a mess. Yeah. Just generally.
And I have to say, I think my quote was going into this movie, I said, I am expecting major suckage.
That was exactly what you said. I'm still under the thing that I would say that it is in the middle of the two, probably leaning towards number one. I actually have to say that I really enjoyed this film. Mm. Like, it was stupid, and the end lost me completely to the point where I was just like, I just don't care anymore. I just want to get out of here. But I will say that every scene where action was happening for the first, like, three quarters of the film, I was either in tears of laughter due to Charlotte Copley's amazing performance in everything he did.
He just
walked through that film. He didn't even need to try. It's just every scene. He's like, and now I'm going to do something dramatic. And now I'm going to do something funny. And now I'm going to do this. The man just fell into any part of that role he wanted to play. And the great thing about being crazy is he can do whatever he wants.
Agreed.
And it worked fantastically. And the only other thing I want to say on his performance is amazing accent work. Yes. Like, his dialogue is impeccable. He plays perfectly good American sound. He plays great cameo kind of South Africa when he actually does that, and then speaks Swahili. You know, and just when he walks past, there was literally that feeling like he was just a step above every other actor in that room. And it was just like when they were like, you can do that, he's just walking past with a real look of, man, what, you can't?
That was just fantastic.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree. I think he was absolutely the best thing in this film. Shane, what did you think?
All right. Basically, what I thought was I didn't really care about the story. there was a lot of action and stuff, which I thought was cool. The humor was very nice, too.
Mm.
But when you brought up that Call of Duty thing, why?
Yeah, there were a few lines like that, though, weren't there?
One of the things I said when we came out, I actually liked that line. At one point in the film, Patrick Wilson, who plays the CIA operative Lynch, who I actually thought did a really good job as well. Patrick Wilson was Night Owl in The Watchmen. Mm. And I thought he at one point, because he's supposed to be this cocky, arrogant desk jockey who's basically playing spy, is what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, he's just an idiot, right? And there's one point where they're watching the monitor and they see the big explosion and he goes, oh, it's just like Call of Duty. And I could almost feel the gamers in the room cringe at that. But I watched that and I went, that is so appropriate for that character to make a comment like that. They were idiots. They were morons, right?
I have to say that
the guy with the spear.
Yeah, the scene where they're very slowly and very ineffectively trying to off somebody in the back of a car is quite hilarious, especially the scene where what tried to be quite cool originally pulls out a pistol to cap the guy in the middle of the thing and manages to drop the clip out of the bottom of the gun and then spend about 5 minutes trying to screw the silencer on wrong before the victim tells him how to put it on, which I thought was brilliant.
Where he says, it's not a silencer, it's a compressor, and you have to turn it counterclockwise. that was very funny. And so the little moments like, and that's the one thing I will give this film. This film was very funny. It had a great sense of humor. It never tried to take itself too seriously. It knew its source material. It knew it was coming from a cheesy 80s series, and it didn't try and be anything more than a cheesy 80s series, is what it really, realistically, was trying to do. And I thought they captured that really well. And it's funny, when I came out of the show, I kind of sat there and went, oh, well, it's better than The Losers. I give it that, because I really didn't like The Losers that much. The Losers, what it was. I thought it was better than The Losers. It has a better sense of humor than The Losers. But it was okay. Yeah. It entertained me. Over 2 days, I've actually decided I liked it more than I originally think I did. Mm. Because I've thought about it a lot. And I've thought about scenes in it. And I've actually thought to myself, I would like to see it again.
Mm.
When it comes out on DVD, I'll watch it again.
Yeah, I will definitely be watching it again. I have to say that the scenes that really spoke to me, what I thought worked really well in my eyes was the, like you said, the fact that they didn't take themselves too seriously. I really, really cringed when I first saw the bit with the tank falling out of the plane.
Oh, yeah.
Because it just seems so far-fetched. But after considering the fact that the show was bizarrely over the top.
And once you put it in context with the far-fetched stuff that they're already doing.
Yes, exactly. It feels a lot less forced. It doesn't feel like the start of Charlie's Angels 2 with the helicopter falling off the vehicle or anything stupid like that. It's realistic enough for you to go, I guess a tank would have those. So, I mean, you could theoretically, and I guess they could do that. The bit where they turn the barrel sideways and start firing, and the guy goes, "What are they doing?" And
he goes, "Is he trying to shoot the drone?" And he goes, "No, they're trying to steer." And
I no, they're trying to fly that tank. That line alone is worth watching the film for.
It's very clever. Now let's talk about the cast for a second. Yeah. I know that Bradley Cooper is a much maligned person on this show, especially with Dave. Dave just hates him with a passion.
I have to say that for once, I'm going to agree with Dave. I actually thought he was the worst part of this film. But again,
I think he's probably the weakest member of the cast. Yes, but I don't think by any look. I'm not nearly in the position of thinking that Bradley Cooper is the worst thing on the world. Which is, I mean, Dave just hates him.
Yeah.
I think he's being miscast a lot. I think Bradley Cooper has insane eyes.
I think he needs to play a bad guy.
He does. He needs to play bad guys. First time I ever saw him was Wedding Crashers, and in Wedding Crashers, he plays the psycho boyfriend, the psycho ex-boyfriend.
Yeah.
And as soon as he comes on screen, you go, "There's something wrong with this guy." And that football game in Wedding Crashers is a genius piece of filmmaking because he's a bastard all the way through it.
Look, and not a great film, but I actually thought he did a really, really good job at Midnight Meat Train.
I haven't seen yet.
Yeah, which he plays the main character throughout the story. Again, not a fantastic film, but he does a really good job in it. Yeah, and I agree. I agree with you in the fact that he suits what they were trying to get, which is they're trying to reimagine.
The original character is played by Dirk Benedict, who is Starbuck from the original Battlestar Galactica series. And he was that cocksure, you know, kissing every girl coming around, blah, blah. He was very much exactly
but
like that original character.
That was
character.
My exact problem, is that they abandoned that within the first 20 minutes of the film, and then it became this ridiculously unnecessary love story to which neither him or the girl actually in any way did anything for me.
No, it's a shame, too, because Jessica Biel is a fox, man. So.
Ah, yeah. No, she did nothing for me in that film. I thought all of that stuff really did not work. Like, to have them maybe just slightly pass along or just throw a few minor comments would have worked a bit better for me. To put in this really unnecessarily long and deep love story that runs throughout the entire movie just wasted my time. And I really actually got kind of a little bit upset with that. I was just like, this feels like it was added just to try and get a few more people into the cinemas.
You know? Which guy were you talking about?
Bradley Cooper was
Face,
yeah.
So is that the guy that you wanted to place Solid Snake for?
No. I was saying, no. Don't misunderstand. I want Liam Neeson in that costume that he was in the funeral scene. Mm-hmm. I want him looking like that to play Big Boss when they do the MVS movie.
Yeah, Liam Neeson's Hannibal.
Yep.
Okay, yeah.
And
with the
eye
patch.
Exactly. Yeah. anyone that knows the series will know what I mean by that. He would play a very good Big Boss, who is the older sort of version of Snake, who is the main character. Yeah. So I reckon that'd be awesome. Any gaming people that want to back me up, send us an email.
Or
I reckon
just
it's awesome.
If you're in the chat room right now, back him up. Now, the person who surprised us all, I think I can speak for all of us, was Quentin Rampage Jackson, who actually wasn't nearly as embarrassing as we thought he was going to be.
You know what it was, though? I stupidly, in my mind, when casting this film in my head, right, goes to a place where I somehow considered Mr. T as a good actor or something like that. I forget. No. But just when I look at him and I go, oh, he's a UFC fighter. He won't be able to pull off Mr. T. And then I go, wait, Mr. T was just a big guy with muscles and stupid
and chains.
And I was just like, you know, it's
Mr. T
really
was a personality,
not
though.
Exactly. Like, yeah. But he pulls that off fine.
Yeah, I thought Rampage Jackson actually did okay. He was not... Put it this way, I think Bradley Cooper was weaker than Rampage Jackson was, which is kind of saying something. Bradley Cooper holds his own. He's okay, his face. He's watchable, and that's fine. But the film is completely stolen by Charlton Copley.
Oh.
Now, Charlton Copley, for those who are trying to place his name but can't figure out who he is, he's the guy from District 9. Now, he's not an actor. He is a producer.
He is now.
Well, he's an actor now. He's a South African film producer who's friends with Neil Blomkamp. And basically, he did District 9 with Neil because Neil needed an actor, and he was just there. And so he did that role, did such a magnificent job in District 9. He's now being picked up for American roles, and his first American role is the A-Team. And he is genius. If there was ever a man, if you could ever say there was somebody who has absolute natural-born talent, this is him.
Yeah.
And he just he walks away with this film.
Dude, completely. the first introduction to him, with him wandering around the hospital and where he stitches a lightning bolt into BA's arm and sets what's his name, Bradley Cooper on fire. I was just like, this is exactly what I wanted him to do. I just wanted a complete balls to the wall, because it's such a different role from what he plays in District 9, which is quite serious and at times, you know, really heart-wrenching. Just to watch him play a maniac is just awesome. And the fun he gets to have with that character, I was along for the ride every time he opened his mouth. It's just a few scenes of mention is when he does a really big speech. We won't say what, but he's wearing a lot of face paint. Definitely an amazing scene. The scene at the start when he's in the hospital, a brilliant. The scene when he does some very special maneuvering ability in a helicopter, which, again, we will leave relatively sort of unexplained. But all of those scenes, he was just fantastic.
He's always got that quick wisecrack to come out of his mouth at all times. And I think even when he is semi-serious, and this is minor spoilage, but, you know, it's not really spoiling anything, but near the very end of the film, when he looks at Face after he's basically gone through the whole thing, and you'll understand why, and he just looks at him and goes, I think you should leave the plans to Hannibal from now on. And it's just this really tender moment for him, because, of course, he's a little bit shell-shocked by the whole thing. And you just sit there and go, yeah, I believe you. I believe you completely. Every time you open your mouth, I believe what you're saying. I believe that you are playing crazy. Because there's actually one point in the film where he says, not as crazy as I make out. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you believe that this is, he's crazy. But he may not be insane.
No.
You know, and there's a big difference there. I thought he was fantastic in the role. Jessica Biel was Jessica Biel. She doesn't really... Jessica Biel doesn't act. Jessica Biel just looks foxy in most of her roles, and she looks kind of badass when she's
getting her gun. I'm just going to say for the record, I thought she left me completely cold. I would have liked her to be any other person, because the way they had her dressed and the way that had her set up, and I'm not trying to be sexist when I say this, but she is usually on screen for an eye candy kind of a situation, and she was just a waste of space, because she's constantly in just business type attire anyway, so she could have been replaced by anyone that could have actually acted a bit. And maybe then I would have bought the love relationship between her and Bradley just a little bit.
We needed her to have the sex appeal of Zoe Saldana in The Losers.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Anyway, so overall, the film is not nearly as bad as you think it's going to be. If you did think it was going to be bad, it is actually a rollicking fun ride. Yes, it stretches the realms of believability. Yes, the ending verges on relatively stupid. On the most part, the effects work is done very well. There is some CG work near the end of the film and the big climax, which is a little bit questionable, but overall, it works quite well. Overall, the action stuff works quite well. I think the film actually does succeed on doing what it set out to do. Mm. What it set out to do was remake a cheesy 80s series, and did it do it well? I think it... Oh, hello.
Good Lord.
Good Lord, what the hell? My board has got a life of its own. And overall, I think it actually set out. Now, the scary part here is that Joe Carnahan, the director of the film, is now actively seeking another directorial gig, which I was talking to Josh about the other day, which I actually think is kind of terrifying, because I think he's completely the wrong director for it. Those who are fans of the Preacher graphic novel, Joe Carnahan, who directed The A-Team, is currently actively trying to get the gig as the director of the Preacher movie. And I think he's wrong. He's all wrong for that film. He doesn't have the subtlety. He doesn't have... A-Team suffers from the same problem, unfortunately, that Smoking Aces suffered from. It's the same problem that The Loser suffers from. And that's why it's not a brilliant film. It's a good film, but it's not a brilliant film, which is it tries too hard.
I would actually go in a completely different direction with it. My main reason for being worried about him directing that particular movie is actually because if you look at what his strengths are, it's him doing balls-to-the-wall action with no plot, right? The biggest problem is there is a lot of part of me goes, when I look at the ridiculous nature of some of the things in Preacher and how far beyond the line they go, especially the stuff in Vietnam when they're flashing back to that and so on and so forth, is very bizarre and very over the top, and there's a lot of explosions and so on and so forth. Where the film would fall apart, and the reason I don't want him to touch it, is because when Preacher becomes poignant, or where it actually needs to start trying to retell a story, because Garth Ennis has a history of going very far off the mark and then bringing it incredibly back in line. And it's something that really only he can do well, which is this whole concept of like going to, you know, like distracting you entirely from the plot and then bring you back and going, oh, wow, that's right. There's actually a good story underneath all this as well.
Yeah.
He won't be able to do that, because if you look at all the films, Smoking Aces and the A-Team both suffer from the same immediate problem for me, which is the fact that when you watch them, when it needs to start telling the story, you get lost, because there's just no interesting backstory.
Yeah, and as I said in the synopsis, the plot to the A-Team is completely convoluted. I mean, it's like they dance around in circles half the time, and you sit there going, did I really need all of that exposition? Let's just blow shit up. You know, it's like, that's what we want to do.
And that's the problem, because like, he may get the scenes right when crazy stuff is happening or when explosions or when they've got Cassidy on screen at all. But yeah, no, I just won't work, man.
Now, I got one last thing here. We got some trivia from IMDb about the A-Team movie, seeing as we're still on the A-Team movie, which is that apparently Bruce Willis was actually considered for the role of Hannibal at one point. And I actually think that would have worked better, quite frankly.
He's a bit pudgy-faced, though.
Maybe, but Liam Neeson, I think, is kind of a one-trick pony, and I think his one-trick is already over. And I like Liam Neeson, don't get me wrong, but I don't see him as George Peppard. I mean, I don't see him as Hannibal. And I had trouble buying that part.
You know what it is? It's because the man doesn't have a funny bone in his body.
No. No, that's true. He has no sense of humor.
No.
And that's why he plays things like the mentor character in things like Batman and what was that other one he played? Star Wars. The prequels, you know, stuff. Like, he always plays that mentor character, and that's fine, and that suits his voice, and it suits all the things that he does. And he was the mentor character in Fallout 3. You know, it's like, you know, it's like that's what he does. And you're right; I don't think he has a sense of humor at all.
Yeah, no.
And Hannibal needed a sense of humor, and Bruce Willis has got a sense of humor.
At least, you know what the one thing is, though. I mean, I've said this before; I hate his voice. I really do.
See, I like his voice, but that's me.
So. Yeah, exactly. I hate his voice to bits. And like, one of the things that I found kind of interesting is to have him so much more animated in this film, because he was, I mean, movement wise, like he was very. In a lot of the films that you see him in, he is the mental character. He doesn't do a lot of work. He kind of stands in the background and overshadows. He looks and talks and says something Morgan Freeman-ish to kind of, you know, to kind of light up the scene and sort of say something poetic or deep or something like that. That's his role. To see him really active and moving around and shooting guns and stuff like that was nice, to at least see him doing something different.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. Although he did do a bit of fighting at the end of Batman Begins, which was also nice as well. So
yeah, that was okay. But I would think more if I was going to go towards that. Taken.
Yeah. And before that, going back a decade, Rob Roy.
Yeah, dude, Rob Roy, Taken, I had no problem with those films. Those are the probably only films that I didn't mind him as a lead role.
Yeah, and Darkman. I'm a big fan. Oh, yeah, I'm a big fan of Darkman. I'm a big fan of the cheesy B-grade Darkman, but I'm a big fan of Raimi. All right, so we're going to finish this off and basically say, Shane Gregory, would you recommend The A-Team to friends?
Yes, if you like explosions and lots of guns and a bit of humor.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Gosh. Yeah, same here. I couldn't have said that better. It's the truth is, if you like this kind of stuff, if you like no plot line and lots of explosions and a bit of laughter, then yeah, for sure, man. It's a great Friday night film.
Damn straight. I say get your popcorn, disengage your brain, don't expect anything out of it, and just enjoy blowing shit up. Mm. And you're going to have a great time. And, you know, it's completely harmless.
Mm.
It's completely harmless and completely innocuous.
We've had now 2 weeks of this. I know.
Can we have a really good film, please?
What have we got next week?
Next week. I don't even know. What did we say was next week's
schedule? Okay, we'll come back to that.
We'll come back to that.
Shall we do the sign-off stuff?
And yeah, we're going to
doing that, you can look it up.
Yeah, we're gonna get ourselves out of here. Shane Gregory, how do people find more about you on the internet?
Okay, basically, you can type in my full name into Facebook, Shane Robert Gregory, or I actually write for rawdlc.com as well.
Cool.
Josh.
Yeah, well, obviously, we have a website. It is rawdlc.com. I'm always running there. Oh, yeah, dude, I'm not done, man. I'll be pimping more before the show's over. You can, of course, see me there. You can also see me at Platforms, which is having the our last episode this Monday, which will be really fun, so make sure you show up. While we're on the subject of it, just to let everybody know, we've decided to change things up because Dave M brought up a very interesting point, which is celebrating a show ending is pointless. What we should do is celebrate the first show starting. So absolutely. Therefore, next week's show will be a return to the way that we started the show. It will just be me, Dave, and Dave. We will go out with kind of the start of the E3 kicking off and a review, and then we will finish off the show with a bit of nostalgia, remembering some of the good stuff, and then we will start DLC the week after, which is, of course, going to start going out off rawdlc.com, and I think we're going to embed the first few
gonna put the Raw DLC embed code. Now this gets a bit technical, but we're going to put the Raw DLC live feed on the current Platforms live feed. So if you come to Platforms the live show, what you're actually seeing is what's also going on their website. The reason we're doing that, we're going to put text saying you're in the wrong place, stupid.
Okay. I like that.
But you know, at least it'll get them. That'll be there for probably two shows, and then we're just going to eliminate that page altogether. Mm. So yep. Now let's make this very clear. Platforms is not dying. Platforms is not ending. Platforms is not going anywhere. What is happening is Platforms is being rebranded and just moved to its own home.
Yeah.
Okay? So we talk about this last show. This Monday night will just be the last show of it here.
Yep.
In this studio with the name Platforms.
Yeah.
It is actually going to a different studio, and it's going to be on a different website. That's all. Yep. That's all that's happening.
We're still there. We're still going to go out, and we have all sorts of great stuff planned.
That's right. But, so don't, and the whole thing about the party thing was, basically, I said to Josh, one of my main concerns about the whole thing was, if you're having a party and you've got alcohol in particular and it descends into chaos, people aren't going to get a clear message as to where to go in the following week. So you want to stay clear and focused and on point so that you explain to people all the way through the show where to be next week.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of why you want to keep it as clear-headed as possible, because it is a transition. Transitions are always tricky.
Yep.
And so we want to try and make sure everybody gets to the right place.
Okay? Absolutely. All right.
So that'll be – but we do have Platforms here as normal, same bat time, same bat channel this week. Next week's film, by the way, is Get Him to the Greek with Russell Brand. So – sorry?
Benzin. By the
way. Oh, Ben's in. Good. All right. So we'll have Ben on the show next week as well. Mm-hmm. We were waiting for confirmation on that. So Ben O'Brien will be on next week with Get Him to the Greek. So that ought to be. And Ben is harsh on comedy.
Mm.
So this is going to be very interesting.
This is his area. This and comic book movies is where Ben excels.
Because Ben is a stand-up comedian. Yes.
Actually, aren't we doing the Supernova thing?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yes. Ooh. Oh, yes. Okay, tricky. Ooh. We will actually put a post up on the site to confirm all of this. Now, hold on a second.
Everything's getting complicated.
Just before we started the show today, we started talking about something. So this is why it all seems very confused at this point in time. There is a chance that we may not be here next week. Now, let's just do this. If the other thing doesn't work out, we will be doing Get Him to the Greek with Ben. Okay? However, one of the things we are trying to do is we are trying to go to Supernova next week. Supernova is a science fiction convention and here in Sydney, and we want to go to Supernova, get lots of video and stuff, and then report back. But the only problem is Supernova is on Saturday. So it is right when we're doing the show. So I will put up on the calendar by Monday, this Monday, at the absolute latest, what the final results of all of this was. Okay. What we might do with Ben, I would still like to get a show out next week. Mm-hmm. How's this for a solution? I'd still like to get a show out next week. Let's see if we can get Ben in. We might not do a live show next week. We might just do an audio recording, and we'll just do a film review and a little bit of news, and we'll try and get that recorded, I don't know, on a Friday evening or something. Okay? Yeah. So we'll see how we go. We'll discuss this, and we'll get back to you on Monday with the details. Check out the blog, geekactually.com. Yeah. That's where you find out all of the information as to what we do.
And awesome geek news.
And awesome geek news.
I say it every week now, but without this site, I would know nothing about geek stuff because I don't have enough time to scour the net.
So in other words, this week you didn't find out anything because it's been a very slow week on the blog. We will be back in the saddle next week. This week has been a really messy week. One of the things that has made it messy is, of course, iPad. We've all had minor obsessions with iPads and so forth, and so it's all just gotten a little bit out of hand. But I'll be back on track as of tomorrow after I get this show up. Okay, so let's just do a couple of things and wind this show up because we have an after show to go into. First thing we're going to say is if you agree or disagree with anything we have to say on this show, or you just want to tell us a piece of news, or you've got a comment for the show, or anything at all, send it to feedback@geekactually.com email, or voicemail it to us at Sydney number 02-8011-3167. Now, if you voicemail it and the call is interesting and on task, we'll play it on the show, and you'll hear yourself on the show. So send us a voicemail or an email. Now, you also remember that the platform's email address has changed. If you have feedback for platforms, send it to feedback@rawdlc.com. Yep. So you can send that there rather than the feedback at platform. Sorry, rather than the platforms@geekenergy.com. That email address is no more. Okay, yep. So send it to the other site. Okay. I've just got to just quickly plug two of our friends, but one of them is kind of a weird plug because, first of all, I'm going to plug Real Junkies. Rob is in our chat room, he was. I think
he was. He had to leave.
Okay, Rob is in our chat room. He's a member of the Real Junkies podcast. This is a podcast that goes out weekly. It's a bunch of film fans who get together, drink tequila, and review films together, and they're a lot of fun to listen to, and I do recommend them. Find them at weekendronan.com or search for Real Junkies, R-E-E-L, Junkies, on iTunes, I should say. Now, the one that is kind of weird, I'm going to plug them anyway, but at the moment you won't find them. All right? So this is the Movie Fan House, or the Movie Fan Cast, as they're called now. Right. Their site got denial of service attacked majorly. They got absolutely hacked out. Everything on the site is gone. All right? So they literally lost the entire site.
How did they do that?
I don't know. They're still trying to recover from it. They are trying to figure out. They've still got all their podcast episodes, but their site was just obliterated. So they are. Our condolences go out to the Movie Fan House boys, Charlie and Jesse. I do really feel for you at the moment. And keep your eyes open for their website, which is moviefanhouse.com. For when they get relaunched, if they get relaunched. I hope they get relaunched. But anyway, they put out a really fun podcast, but unfortunately, it is nowhere to be seen at the moment. Because their site is down, the feed is dead, which means on iTunes even, there's no episodes.
Damn.
So at the moment, we just want to put our condolences out to the Movie Fan House boys and say, good luck with getting that all back together, guys. Okay, so that's what can happen on the internet. You can just be slammed. And of course, Josh, here's your slide, rawdlc.com or DLC Live, as the show will be in a week's time. Mm. So stick with it, start following. And everything I know about gaming comes from their site. All right?
And talking to me about once every 2 days.
And that helps. That helps too. Yeah. All right, we're going to get ourselves out of here. I think we've just about covered everything we have to cover. If we've forgotten anything, it'll come up in the after show. For those who are watching the after show, stick around with us in about 10 minutes.
It's going to be
starting that.
Probably the most fun you will.
It's going to be the weirdest after show.
It's going to be awesome fun because we're getting to play Scrabble, and I am incredibly excited about this. So.
Not just Scrabble. We're going to do other things too.
But that's the main thing I'm looking forward to.
All right, so we're going to get out of here. In the meantime, go see more movies. Oh, wait a minute. First of all, I'm going to say thank you very much, guys, for joining me. Thank you very much, chat room. Thank you for everybody who downloaded this episode, and we'll see you next week. Remember to go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies, and we'll see you all again next week. Thank you.